My name is Zimin Xu, Dr. Z, Architect Evangelist at Microsoft. With me today is Kevin Israel. Today we are going to talk about implementing a hybrid SOA and ROA architecture. But before we get started, Kevin, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Kevin Israel. I am a Team System MVP and an architect by trade.
Let's spend the first couple minutes to talk about what is SOA and what is ROA.
Sure. I think that's kind of an open-ended question as far as the what is SOA. Any service-based system or system that's centered around providing services that are consumed by clients can be considered a service-oriented architecture. Specifically, in the context to frame this conversation, we're speaking more in terms of perhaps WCF services or traditional web services. Now, in a service-oriented architecture, the underlying technology that implements the architecture isn't important. It's more of, again, an architectural style and architectural pattern. What you see with service-oriented architectures, though, is that there are very specific standards and specifications wrapped around implementing a service. So for the purpose of this discussion, really what we're talking about is when I think of a service, I'm thinking of something that has a specific URI or an endpoint that can be consumed by my client and exposes methods which my application can then utilize to process information. So in a very broad sense, that's the stroke that I'm painting SOA with in the context of this conversation.
What about the ROA? What is ROA?
Well, ROA, again, stands for Resource-Oriented Architecture. I call it ROA, since I also call it SOA. So resource-oriented architecture is, again, it's an architectural style with really no standards. It doesn't implement any standards. Now, that's not to say it doesn't use standards, but it doesn't really have a lot of standards surrounding it as far as how it's implemented or used. When we think of ROA, resource-oriented architecture, then I'm basically saying my system is not really so concerned about providing a service. It's more about providing resources. And it's a distinct semantic difference of how my service operates. There are some major differences which we can dive into, but when I think of resource-oriented architecture, basically what I'm saying is we're thinking of REST. Representational state transfer. And it's just a architectural difference in how the client and server interact with each other. There's really no proxies that are being generated. We're exchanging data through a simple request, and then the server simply returns data honoring that request. So a good example would be, again, a very vanilla generic example. If I'm looking at a news site and I click a link, that link then provides a URI that my browser then goes to and says, I want to see this resource for, you know, technology. And the server says, here is what I have as a resource for that technology. So it sends the data back to the client, in this case, the browser. That transfer changes the state of my browser. My browser now is looking at technology.htm. And so since the server has then affected the client, we would call that effect the transfer, and it changes the client's state. The client clicks another link requesting a resource. The server sends back that information, changes what I'm looking at in the browser. Therefore, the state of the client has again changed. So that's again, representational state transfer. It's all about requesting a resource from the server and having the server send that resource, represented a representation of that resource back to the client in any different number of formats, text, HTML, XML, and then it affects the state of that client. The client then can consume that resource.
You have a concrete example that sort of highlights the key differences between SOA and ROA.
Well, certainly. I mean, there are many examples on the web. Amazon would be a good example. There are certain transactional processing that needs to occur, application to some of Amazon's web services. So Amazon provides web services which can be consumed, have these methods that we talked about for transactional processing and so for more of a B2B scenario. But what if I want to search Amazon? That's completely different story. I'm not really invoking a service to do that. I'm simply requesting a resource. I want to see books that are on software. And so Amazon sends the representation back to me. I'm not invoking a service to get that data. I'm simply saying, hey, Amazon, I need to see books for technology. And it sends back, oh, here are the books that we have. Versus saying, okay, I have a customer that now wants to purchase this. I need to check inventory. I need to make sure I have that inventory. I need to calculate sales tax, blah, blah, blah. Now we're getting into transactional processing in which a series of machine-to-machine occurrences take place. So it's a little bit different. And we've been using REST, you know, on the web for quite a while. It's just now becoming really into the forefront with the ease of use with today's technology. But I mean, most search engines are RESTful in that we're requesting resources for specific things and it's sending that information back. I'm not doing any transactional processing. I'm not asking for a lot in terms of functionality. I'm saying, hey, I need to see this, or maybe I need to update this, and it's simply doing it.
It sounds like we always will need some services and resources for search purposes and for other purposes. But what challenge does it bring to this whole architecture? And why we even needed to be concerned about this hybrid approach?
Well, again, since we are dealing with two siloed architectures, they both are still living in my enterprise. And they're both going to still interact at some level with my data access layer, right? Because resources are about returning data and returning a representation of that resource. Services about other things, whether it's returning data or modifying data or transactional processing. So the challenge is I still have two architectural patterns within my enterprise. Both of them share the same common problem domains as the other ones, in that I have versioning, I have manageability, I have to somehow aggregate these resources into a manner that I'm able to manage all the services and all the resources. How do I do that? So they still fundamentally present the same challenges within enterprise. So that's really the crux of implementing the hybrid architecture, is how do I evolve my entire enterprise holistically? To think that I can implement a search engine in which the data doesn't change or the requirements don't change for what the user sees is crazy. It's going to have to evolve. All of a sudden, you know, now the decision is made that instead of just returning certain data with the search results, now I need to return much more data. Well, depending on how I implement that, I had to version my ROA just like I versioned my SOA. So that's really what we're talking about. I think conceptually, if you all can look at this, conceptually this is essentially what we're talking about here. Again, this is just a conceptual model, but you can see that I'm going to have my client layer. In here I'm going to have my service layer. And obviously behind that I have my business facade and my business rules. So what we're basically saying is that within the service layer, I'm going to go ahead and have a high-level separation of domains, you might say. So I'm going to have a more of a RESTful services, my ROA domain of services within my service layer. In conception, I'm also going to have my SOA services within my service layer. The clients are going to make calls as normal through my SOA. And SOA is going to interact with the appropriate layers that it needs to, my business facade, implementing perhaps frameworks, and these type of things. My resource, again, and that's the conceptual difference, is my resource implemented correctly is just simply saying I need to perhaps modify this piece of data or this resource, or I just need to see some representations. I need to see some data. So its level of interaction within my enterprise is a little bit more flat. It's going to essentially, as my ROA is going to interact with the data access layer, the data access layer with the database, and that type of pattern. Once I start scoping that I need more than this, this is when I need to start implementing SOA. So that's kind of one of the things that when you're thinking about implementing both, it's when I start exceeding this level of interaction conceptually within my enterprise, this is when I need to start saying, you know what, this should not be an ROA service, this should be an SOA service. And so maybe if we keep this conceptual level in mind, that will help guide us.
The SOA and ROA, they basically sort of communicate with the same backend data, but they have its own business logic and a facade. They don't necessarily, they have their own boundaries, if you will, but they don't necessarily communicate or interact with each other. Is that right?
That's pretty much correct. They work in terms of isolation. And because they're really, again, addressing two different business needs and two different business models. So I would say their commonality comes at the data access layer, and obviously the interaction with the client. And I think, you know, if you wanted to think of this in terms of how I would actually implement this in an application, think of my client making a call to a REST services and basically say, I need to see a list of customers whose zip code is XXX. And the server then transfers that data, affecting the client state. This client isn't able to consume that data and say, okay, this is a list of customers. Now I need to select a customer and start processing a transaction. From there, I shift from a REST service to more of a service-oriented architecture, because now I want services that maybe do some business processing, maybe do some authentication, maybe do some asynchronous processing. We're processing a loan application. That's not the job of a REST service. Perhaps providing that initial data up front is. And so that's where I think the distinction lies, in that what is the business process that these two different architectures are providing me, but how does my application really capitalize on that?
Within the context of this hybrid implementation, when is SOA more appropriate versus when is RWA more appropriate?
Well, I think if we take a very high-level view of the architectures and understand how they're implemented, that will help guide us. So, for example, one of the concerns with ROA is security, where I have a little bit more of a better security model with SOA. Then obviously if security is a concern, if that's a business rule, then I'm not going to go with ROA. I'm probably going to go with SOA. And that's not to say that you can't implement security, but I mean, let's be clear, SOA is a better model for security. If I need schema validation, then I'm going to go with SOA. If I need asynchronous processing, you know, I need to send this server something and call me back when you're done, then I need SOA. But if I need large amounts of data whose format will probably not change and who really needs no schema validation, then ROA is probably going to be my better bet. If security is not a concern, if I need to syndicate, so syndication is a big thing in today's world. We're sending data in Atom and RSS. Well, that's consumable. That's going to be ROA. So those are going to be my guiding principles of how, some of the guiding principles, not all of them. And transport mechanisms are big too. How does my messaging, what transport protocol? If I need to use something other than HTTP or HTTPS, then I need SOA. I'm not going to be able to use REST. So again, those are some of the patterns that we see when implementing.
Can you give us some implementation and usage scenarios of this hybrid architecture?
Well, again, kind of similar to the things we talked about. If I'm implementing any type of search functionality, then I'm thinking more of a RESTful type pattern where I'm returning huge lists of data. Now, once that data needs to be acted on, and I may need to implement business rules and inject some other things, then I'm dealing with, you know, objects perhaps surrounding the data that's going back and forth, and then I'm talking about SOA. So usage patterns, I mean, if you think about, you sit down, as an example, you walk into a realtor, and your realtor says, "Hi, Dr. Z, you're looking for a house in what city?" And you say, "I'm looking for a house in Richmond." And so he types in Richmond, and he calls his REST service. The REST service then returns houses available in Richmond. And now he says, which one would you like to look at? And so you pick out one, perhaps, from his application, and now all of a sudden he starts drilling down into the data. That could still be REST. But once you say, you know what, I would like to apply for a loan in order to purchase this house, now that's a clear, now we've broken away from REST, because now we're getting to the realm of processing data and asynchronous calls and those types of things. So when I think of usage patterns, that's exactly what I'm talking about. When I initially enter the application domain, I am asking for specific data from my REST services. I'm requesting a resource that's returning that. But now once I need to start acting upon that data and enforcing business rules and all these other things and asynchronous processing, and I need to worry about security and all those features, then my usage pattern changes. I switch from REST and ROA down to services. And so if I follow that type of guide for implementing a hybrid architecture, that's how it's going to look for my application domain. Those are good usage scenarios. That's a general example.
Do you see this hybrid approach a general trend in future application development?
Well, certainly. I think if you look at now with the cloud computing and certainly mashups. Mashups are a big thing now. And a mashup basically means that I'm aggregating data content from various sources, and that's the term mashup, because there's no one particular source that it may be coming from. And I think as we get into looking at enterprise mashups, yes, it's actually a term, business mashups, then we'll see that this hybrid architecture evolve, right? Because especially in today's business world, it's all about data and my access to it. So executive management wants to see as their dashboards, they want to go check things. You know, a beautiful way to get information out that's consumable is RSS and these type of syndication platforms that we talked about. So I think as we get into more mashups and developers start working with mashups, Microsoft itself is really getting involved with mashups and having mashup tools that allow developers to work, then we'll start seeing these hybrid architectures take more and more of a place within the enterprise.
Kevin, this has been a very interesting discussion. I want to thank you for your time.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.